The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles from the Triangle Gardener magazine and website, the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, and the State by State Gardening e-magazine, and maybe from Garden Smarts by Shelley Goldblum. And we'll start with the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, Growing Marjoram. Shakespeare knew his herbs and characterized them in his work. In All's Well That Ends Well, someone gives a compliment, describing another as the sweet marjoram of the salad, or rather, the herb of grace. It is a delightful herb, at once sweet and savory. Use it in sauces, egg dishes, fish, poultry, and, as the bard alludes, in salads. Oregano marjoram goes by several common names: sweet marjoram, garden marjoram, and annual marjoram. It is hardy only to USDA Zone 9 and rarely survives even mild winters. Plant seeds or purchase plants each spring. Sweet marjoram has an upright, bushy growth habit and can reach a foot in height. Where perennial, it can reach 2 feet. Growing marjoram. Start the tiny seeds indoors under grow lights about 6 weeks before the last frost date in your region. Set out seedlings in full sun in slightly alkaline soil that's rich in organic matter. Place plants about 6 to 8 inches apart, or in clumps of 2 or 3 plants set 12 to 14 inches apart, and keep the soil slightly moist until they are growing vigorously. Pinch back stems to maintain a bushy growth habit. After each harvest, add 1 inch of compost in a 12-inch wide band around the plants. When flowers appear, cut entire plants to stand 3 to 4 inches tall, and repeat as more flower buds appear. Use leaves fresh and dry some for winter use. Leaves dry quickly and retain their flavor well. To dry, tie stems together and hang bunches upside down in a shady, dry, well-ventilated place. After drying, remove leaves from stems and store in an airtight container. Next, planting raspberries. Raspberries thrive in well-worked, well-fed, slightly acid soil, pH 5.5 to 6.8. Like most fruits, they crave sunlight and plenty of moisture, but adequate drainage is critical. Take the time to eliminate perennial weeds as much as possible, either by repeated tilling or by planting a cover crop a year in advance. Be sure to mix in some 10-10-10 fertilizer, 1 to 2 pounds per 20 feet of row, or plenty of manure in early spring before you plant. Not even virus-free or tissue culture plants are immune to infection, so destroy any neighboring wild raspberries or blackberries within about 300 feet that might harbor disease. Planting raspberries. Early spring, or late winter in the south, is the best time to plant raspberries. If you are importing plants from a friend's patch or moving plants around in your own expanding patch, spring is the time to dig them. Keep bare root raspberry roots moist by covering them with damp peat moss or soil until planting time. Soak the roots in a bucket of water for an hour before setting plants in the garden. Set each plant in a well-watered hole that's wide enough and deep enough for the roots to spread out. Firm the soil over the roots and cover each cane an inch or two deeper than it was previously grown. Water some more. Cut each cane back to an 8-inch handle to give the roots a chance to get established. To prevent anthracnose disease in black raspberry canes, cut them right back to ground level. The handle usually dies back anyway, unless conditions are perfect. It's not a problem as long as the roots are all right underneath. Red and yellow raspberries multiply by root suckers that spread rapidly in all directions. They can be confined to a hedgerow, but not to rows of individual plants. Planting black raspberries. Black caps produce no root suckers at all and propagate only by tip layering. They can be limited easily to isolated hills without crowding neighbors. Purple raspberries can be trained to a row of discrete plants, but some do produce root suckers which can fill out a hedgerow in time. In either case, set the plants about 3 feet apart in a row. Those that sucker can be allowed to fill out a hedge no more than 2 feet wide. Those that do not will stay in a single row of hills. Leave about 6 or 7 feet between rows to promote good air circulation for healthy plants and berries. You can till the aisles bare and mulch them heavily, or plant grass and keep it mowed. Now from the State by State Gardening e-magazine, Space-Saving Herbs by Kenny Coogan. If you could only grow one group of edibles, herbs should be at the top of your list due to their versatility in the kitchen. They are also easy to grow due to their forgiving nature and generally not picky on their soil conditions. When you consider that purchasing a cut bunch of herbs is the same price or more than a small potted plant, it just makes sense to grow them yourself. We all have small areas that we pass by every day that we overlook. We should stop thinking of an herb garden as a dedicated garden bed for herbs and start integrating our herbs into our existing landscapes. It is true that some can be used as ground cover, but they do not have to be given that much space. Place them in pots in between your flowers or other edibles. Exhibit them near small, underutilized locations, such as on front steps, windowsills, back porches, in your kitchen, adjacent to grills and food prep areas, and you will be encouraged to use them often. Sage advice. Herbs are great for not only cooking, but also for adding textures, scents, and visual appeal to your garden. Luckily for us, herbs will grow in just about anything. They are easy to grow in containers for year-long supply, or for those with limited space. Herbs don't need to be fussed over. Aside from starting with a high quality organic soil that contains trace minerals, I do not fertilize my herbs. If you find that your plants are lighter green or have mottled leaves, you can add a diluted liquid fertilizer that contains nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and a small amount of trace elements every 2 weeks. Investing in a loose potting soil that maintains moisture is ideal. Herbs generally have small root systems and do not mind drying out in between watering. Thyme and oregano will not be as flavorful if they get a lot of water. Oregano will even grow in poor soil. By regularly harvesting, you will get bushy herbs. Pinch terminal growth every few days to keep plants looking full. The more you harvest, the more you get. During the growing season, you could use the cut and come again approach to use them in the kitchen every day. You must use them or you will lose them. Harvest before they set flowers. Most herbs will require plenty of sun, typically 6 or more hours. For herbs grown indoors, a south or east-facing window is best. Herbs that are labeled as full sun elsewhere may do best in partial shade in the south. Not many herbs can be grown in full shade, but many can grow in lightly shaded areas. Small pots, like those seen in many magazines, which show 2 to 3 inch terracotta pots with herbs growing in them, in reality dry out very quickly. If I cut off a large part for cooking, I try to root the stem. If even a small portion of the cuttings make it, I am happy. I cannot have enough herbs. I do use small pots for newly rooted cuttings. Some herbs you may not want to ever plant in your garden, like mint, due to its spreading properties. The more soil mass you have, the more flexibility you will get. By using larger pots, you will not have to be married to your plants. You can leave them for a few days and the soil mass will allow for the correct moisture retention. Time's a-wastin'. Now that you're familiar with some herb basics, try it yourself. Kick off the summer with some of these flavorful combinations. Create flavorful fares in one pot. The theme, apple tyzine. The thriller would be a tiny Thai pepper. The filler would be a Thai basil. And the spiller would be cilantro. The next theme would be baked and loaded. Your thriller, garlic chives. Your filler, oregano. And your spiller, thyme. And the next theme, Indian fusion. Your thriller is mountain mint. Your filler is curry. And your spiller, pennyroyal. And your next theme, Mamma Mia, the thriller, flat leaf parsley, filler, box basil. Your spiller, hot and spicy oregano. The next theme, powerful pesto, the thriller, African blue basil, the filler, cinnamon basil, and the spiller, toward nasturtium. Our next theme, pucker up, the thriller, lemon verbena, the filler, lemon balm, and the spiller, lemon thyme. Next we have, as a theme, superficial stew, the thriller, tarragon, the filler, sage, and the spiller, lemon thyme. Next, the The theme is tea time. The thriller, chamomile. The filler, lemon balm. And the spiller, peppermint or spearmint. And the next theme, Tex-Mex. Your thriller, flat leaf parsley. Your filler, Coltantro. And the spiller, Cuban oregano. And for the final theme, Herb de Provence with American twist. The thriller is lavender or rosemary. Your filler would be marjoram savory. And your spiller would be thyme oregano. And now from the Triangle Gardener, What's Bugging Your Lawn? By Shannon Hathaway. Have you ever walked outside and discovered damage to your lawn and you were not sure what is responsible or how to treat the problem? Is it an insect? Is it a mammal? Before you go into the garage to find whatever chemical you may have, let's pause. To correctly treat the problem, you must identify the culprit first and then look for appropriate treatment options. Here in the Piedmont of North Carolina, our most common lawn pests are grubs, moles, voles, fall army worms, fire ants, spittle bugs, sugarcane beetle, mole crickets, and the occasional pesky raccoon. Are you seeing raised tunnels in your lawn that sink in when stepped on? Sometimes there are cracks along the tops of the tunnels. Moles and voles are responsible for this damage. There is a complex symbiotic relationship going on here. Moles are the excavators. They are subterranean mammals searching for grubs in your soil. They are not eating your plant roots. Voles are smaller, shrew-like opportunists using the mole tunnels to find plant roots to eat. Moles are meat eaters. Voles are vegetarians. Controlling the moles and voles is most successful if you treat for the grubs. Start at the bottom of the food chain, and the mammals will go elsewhere looking for food. Moles and voles are rodents, and they breed like rodents. Eliminating one may give you a feeling of satisfaction, but it does nothing to reduce the colony. There are a number of organic granular repellents with good results. Poison peanuts can be effective, but they pose a real danger to children and pets. The most effective option to reduce this rodent population is to close the barn door before the horse gets out. Eliminate their food source, grubs. These grubs develop into Japanese beetles, an invasive, non-native pest. They emerge from the lawn in June. Eat your canna lilies, crepe myrtles, and roses, and then lay their eggs below ground in July and die. The eggs hatch quickly, and then the larvae, grubs, are active below ground from August through May, eating grass roots starting in early spring. They can be controlled best at the grub stage. Organic methods include applying milky spore bacteria, a biological agent that feeds on the grubs and keeps them in check. It is slow to spread and takes up to 3 years to make a difference. A recommended chemical treatment for grubs uses imidacloprid, found in the product Grub No More. Fall armyworms can be a devastating pest. Some years, not much of a concern, but when they appear in mass, they can destroy an entire lawn in days. If your lawn is dying in a steadily progressing line, you may have fall armyworms. The easiest way to check is with a soapy water flush. Put a good squirt of liquid dish soap in a bucket and fill the bucket with water. Dump that water along the leading edge of the damaged lawn. If you have fall armyworms, they will come wriggling up out of the lawn within minutes. According to NC State Turf Files, the fall armyworm is a sporadic but serious pest of turf grasses in North Carolina. The larva is the damaging stage of this pest, and it's 1 inch to 1.5 inches long when fully grown. It can vary in color from green to brown to almost black. There are 4 black dots on the dorsal side of each abdominal segment. It has a distinct inverted Y on the head. Fall armyworms emerge from webby nests, often found on the foundation of the home. They do not nest in sod. Homeowners can treat with Tall Star if they have correctly identified fall armyworms as the pest. Always follow instructions when applying pesticides. Fire ants can be damaging to lawns and are a danger to humans as well. Fire ants create large earthen mounds in lawns or garden beds. Often, they are found in the lawn by the edge of the curb. If their nest is disturbed, they excrete an alarm pheromone that is a signal to attack. They will swarm the attacker with painful bites that can be very dangerous to people with allergies or young children. A pot full of boiling water poured into the mound is the cheapest and most organic way to kill a fire ant colony, but handle carefully. Tall Star is a common chemical pesticide for fire ants. Spittle bugs are another common lawn pest here. Spittle bugs live inside masses of spittle or foamy froth, giving them their name. They lay orange eggs in hollow stems or lawn debris. The pale green nymphs hatch in about 2 weeks and begin to feed by sucking juices from Bermuda, centipede, and zoysia grass. When you walk through the lawn, they will fly up and land on your legs. The best method of control is to dethatch your lawn, removing the nesting debris. Spittle bugs can be treated with neem oil, Tall Star, or Grub No More. Sugarcane beetles' preferred food is sugarcane, as their name suggests, but they are fond of Bermuda grass and zoysia. They are 1/2 inch long and dull black in color, with perforations along their abdomen forming stripes. They eat the roots and crowns of grasses and can cause some tunneling damage. Tall Star is the best control. Mole crickets are becoming more pervasive here. They are 1 inch long with shovel-like front legs for digging, hence the name. Mole crickets are gray to tan with large black eyes. They feed on grass roots and shoots, preferring Bermuda, centipede, and zoysia grasses. Determine their presence with a soapy water flush in spring. You can control the nymphs with Grub No More in June to July. Adults are harder to control. Visible damage includes small mounds of soil scattered on the surface, or the lawn may feel spongy underfoot due to the insects' tunnels. The grass will turn brown and die in areas where mole crickets have tunneled. And what if you have just laid fresh sod, but when you wake up in the morning, It looks like someone rolled it all back. Could it be pesky neighborhood kids? Actually, the culprit is a raccoon looking for grubs and insects under that easily accessible layer of sod. As Benjamin Franklin once said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. A healthy lawn is less susceptible to injury from pests. Taking good care of your lawn by fertilizing or top dressing with compost at the right time can give the lawn the nutrition it needs to be more vigorous and less susceptible to damage. Garden events coming? Make a hypertufa planting trough. June the 23rd, 9 a.m. to 12 noon. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. Call 919-614-0109. 919-614-0109. This happens at Lasting Impressions in Raleigh. An herbaceous perennials propagation class and demonstration. June 23rd, 9 a.m. until 12 noon. Join Doug Rurin in this propagation class and demonstration focused solely on propagating herbaceous perennials. Techniques discussed include division, stem and leaf cuttings, and seed and other techniques. Some of the newly propagated plants are shared with the students. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. Call 919-513-7005 for more information. And this happens at J.C. Roston Arboretum in Raleigh. And then Gardening Adventures with Extension Master Gardener Volunteers, June the 25th, 10 a.m. until 11:30 a.m. Four Seasons of Fragrant Flowers with Cindy Chapel, Wake County Extension Master Gardener. Gardens overflow with spring flowers, but once spring turns into summer, may simply turn green. Here in the Southeast, it's easy to plant a garden with year-round interest, including one with flowers every month of the year. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. Call 919-513-7005 for more information. This will be at the J.C. Roston Arboretum in Raleigh. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long, until the next time. If you have comments or questions, call 919-832-5138.